lazy, slothful, and I cannot seem to get out of it. I don't know why. If I could handle that little issue, that would take care of so many other problems that I have.
Have you always had difficulty with motivation?
Yes. The other day, I spent like 11 hours. That's ridiculous.
Do you lack the motivation to get things done? Has procrastination become a debilitating problem? Before you label yourself a failure or just plain lazy, consider a new perspective. Today on Hope for the Heart, June Hunt helps this gentleman discover the root cause of his procrastination, correct some faulty thinking, and take steps towards freedom. Chances are you can relate to his story. Now, just a quick note, the call and this program are pre-recorded. Let's listen.
Procrastination. We can all remember times when we thought, if only I had started earlier, if only I had finished this, I could have, if I had just allocated the time better, if I'd used my time better. While negative repercussions are motivators for us to do so much better, sometimes that doesn't work. There becomes a pattern, a habit. Some people could call it an addiction to procrastinating. Let's listen to a call. This is a man who's asking for advice.
I am lazy, slothful, and I cannot seem to get out of it. I don't know why. If I could handle that little issue, that would take care of so many other problems that I have.
Have you always had difficulty with motivation?
Yes.
Paint the picture of what concerns you.
Well, I tried setting up a schedule, you know, sleeping this late and no more. I even moved my alarm completely across the room so I wouldn't hit the snooze, but I still get up, hit the snooze, and go right back to bed. No idea. The other day, I spent like 11 hours. That's ridiculous. I don't need to be sleeping that much.
So if your body was allowed to just sleep naturally, would it be approximately 11 hours?
No, not at all.
You don't feel any motivation to get up, and then you just intentionally choose to go back to sleep?
Yeah, that's probably a lot of it right there.
Okay, he's saying he slept for 11 hours. Are you assuming that it's all about laziness? He's saying he doesn't really need sleep, so then why would he be sleeping? There can be sometimes a medical condition. Just be thinking with me, what's going on here? Is there a need that is beyond what he assumes? He's saying, I'm just lazy, but he's trying to do something. He did set the alarm over there. Of course, he turned it off. I guess nobody in this room has ever done that. Let's just be thinking, is it laziness? The reason I said, if you slept for 11 hours, would that actually be your norm? And he said no. So he knows that. In fact, he just totally dismissed that. Let's go a little further here. Let me ask about the word procrastination. Do you feel you've had difficulty with procrastination? It's just been a pattern of life.
That's definitely me.
There are those who procrastinate because they're purely rebellious. They're defying authority. Now, I'm not hearing that.
No, that's not that at all.
No. So I actually came up with five more intentional procrastinators and then five unintentional. To be clear, I mentioned rebellion, defying authority. When I asked him about that, he said, no, that wouldn't be me at all. This kind of procrastinator could be what? Which other kind? We've got to figure out. So he could be one of the unintentional procrastinators, but we don't know. The point here is, if he comes to you or you're on the phone with him, just because people say, I've got a problem with laziness, don't just assume that it's laziness. There may be something else. Look, he's calling because he doesn't like this. So it's not, I don't care, it's not apathetic. He cares enough to call. That's why, you see, I'm thinking it's something beyond lazy. Or else he would say, I don't care what you think. I'm going to do what I'm going to do anyway. So if we're going to assume it could be one of these five, someone said, could he be a perfectionist? He may be. But that's what we've got to find out. So that's where we're going. I'm going to hit the five unintentional procrastinators. And you tell me if you think one of these five fit. And I've put names with them. Perfectionist Patty thinks she must do everything perfectly because anything short of perfection is failure. Poor self-worth Paul. I feel so insignificant, so incapable. I'm sure I'll fail. I'm just not good enough to succeed, so there's no use trying. Fear-based Freddie. I know I won't succeed. It would be horrible if I failed. I dread starting something that might go wrong. If I put it off, I won't have to deal with it. I'm afraid to start because I'm sure I'll fail. Two more. Lack of goals, Larry. I don't know why I'm doing what I'm doing. No matter what I do, I don't really feel fulfilled. Why start this task when it probably won't make any difference? I need to wait until I can figure out what I really want to do. He doesn't have a real sense of purpose for his life. And in the last, overwhelmed Olivia. There's just no way I can finish on time because I've got so much I'm doing, my life feels out of control. Since I can't get it all done on time, I'll work on a project that I really do enjoy doing. At least I'll get that one thing accomplished. The person who's overwhelmed procrastinates because of feeling responsible for more than God had given to do. Do any one of those five even begin to ring a bell with you?
Not poor self-worth, but pretty much all the rest of them. I don't like to fail. I hate it. So if there's a chance, I won't even do anything. I'll be like, no, I ain't messing with it.
Okay.
I'll use the excuse, well, I could do that if I really wanted to, but it's got to be just right.
Okay. What's his last word? Just what? Right. It's got to be just right. Now, he said it's not self-worth. He eliminated that one. And he said pretty much the others. So he may be afraid of not doing what's right because with perfectionism, that's based on fear. What are you thinking right now that he is struggling with? If you had to pick one, and by the way, we can be a combination. It doesn't have to be just one, but both being predominant in your mind. Feeling overwhelmed. He said it wasn't poor self-worth. What kind of question then would you ask that might be helpful? Because this didn't happen just yesterday. This has been going on for quite a while. What kind of question do you need to ask to find out more about his situation to really help him?
When did it start?
Okay, why do you say that?
Because that's going to be the root that started the whole ball rolling.
Okay, so that's the root. There's some reason. People don't start out like being perfectionists or being highly fearful. There's something that's happened somewhere. Find out. Are you talking about from early adulthood or childhood or what? What do you think? Where would you start?
I think a lot of these things start in childhood.
All right. Thank you. By the way, I'm wanting you to be able to learn how to help people. People, they look for wise people. And you may be that wise person, the only wise person that they'll ever know. And you can be of great help. But sometimes it is exactly what he said. Go back and find out if something's not functional now, is there a possibility that something could have occurred early on in his life?
This makes me want to ask one question. Who was so hard on you when you were growing up?
Well, I mean, that's a whole other story right there.
No, this may be the story.
I understand. Well, my mom, she was an alcoholic. I didn't live with her. Now, my dad, I remember him at one point. I was doing something, and it was the first time I'd ever done it. I think it was putting a tire on a rim or something for a car.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't getting it just right. And I remember he goes, can't you do nothing right?
Mm.
And he did that a lot when I was a kid. But I remember that incident because I'm like, I've never done this.
Was he himself a perfectionist?
He is, yeah.
He's pretty much.
Fairly organized guy.
Those who have one perfectionistic parent can have a very high probability of having to have everything perfect. And the reason is there's no other way that you're accepted. If you don't do it perfectly, it's just wrong. Your best isn't good enough. You know, for a kid, changing a tire is a challenge. I hurt for those who are perfectionists because I know how hard they are on themselves. And I would venture to say, at times you are harder on yourself than anyone else around you. Is that correct?
pretty close.
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you understand why it would be natural to procrastinate? Because if you can unlock this door, you can correct some faulty thinking. You can overcome the destructive power that procrastination has in your life.
This is Hope for the Heart, and June Hunt will be back in just a minute. Today's conversation is about the destructive power that procrastination can have in our lives and how to correct faulty thinking that leads to procrastination. If you just joined us, you can listen to this program from the start or share it with a friend on our mobile app or at hopefortheheart.org. Right now, let's get back to June as she looks at perfectionism and procrastination.
So, what is the mindset of the perfectionist?
If they don't do it right, it's not worth doing.
Oh, if it's not done right, it's not worth doing. That is an actual saying that a lot of people have used, especially on a lot of other people. Yes?
Then it leads to the fear of rejection.
This fear of rejection for not doing it perfectly?
Yes, you just fear of rejection, so you kind of close in, and you just, I'll do it all myself, and then that cycle breaks in. So then you feel overwhelmed, then you can't get anything done. It's a chain of events because of the decisions you've made.
Got to do it yourself because somebody else may not do it right. One last comment right here.
If a parent perceives themselves to be perfect, then they want their offspring to be perfect. And the only way that offspring can be perfect is if they think and say and do as the parent tells them.
So the perfect parent is seeing that child, the offspring, as an extension of himself or herself. And therefore, since I'm perfect, you have to be perfect too.
And if you're not perfect, you're a reflection back on my imperfection. How dare you?
How dare you? I remember one grown adult who was a perfectionist, and she said her mother never allowed her to make up her bed because she could not do it perfectly. It can get to the extreme. So how competent did she feel? She was actually a competent person, but felt bad because she couldn't do everything perfect, and then she made perfectionism on everybody else mandatory. It really hurt her relationships, and she was a wonderful person. So what does a person like this need? What on the inside needs to take place? What needs to be infused on the inside of this? Okay, her grace, what?
Self-worth,
affirmation, confidence, acceptance. Yeah, surrender. Surrendering these impossible demands that won't work anyway. Okay, let's go back to the call.
Do you know any perfect person?
No, I don't. It's this idea that I have, and I know it's not right, and I'm starting to realize that, I think, that if I could just get to this level of doing stuff, then that'd make everything easy, and I wouldn't have to worry about anything.
Do you have difficulty delegating things to others?
Yeah. I used to work at a restaurant. I would just grind my teeth whenever I had to help somebody else do something. It was so annoying.
The mindset for the perfectionist is, if I do it, it'll be done right. Yet, you can always find somebody who can do something better than you in most areas. The Bible says when we compare ourselves among ourselves, we are not wise. The only person we're to compare ourselves to is Christ, and then we're all in the same boat, and we all need a Savior.
Okay, so here we talked about this restaurant, and that kind of goes back to your comment. It's hard for perfectionists to work with others because they have these self-imposed standards. And yet, you want people to do things right, but he said it just grinds his teeth seeing what other people would do. Do you think people pick up on that? Yeah. I mean, it's like we have these little antennas that we walk around with saying, I don't think you're doing that right. You know, you need to do it better. And there's this condemnation that's communicated without words. There's a spirit. There's an attitude. So who is he focusing on? Himself. He's focusing on himself. He knows that it's hard for him to delegate, to work with others. Why is it unwise to compare ourselves with others? It is false objectivity. There's always somebody better that we could find, and always somebody worse. at doing whatever it is. The main thing is we're told it is not wise. We are not wise if we are spending our time looking at ourselves in comparison with others. Now we've got to move to get him some help, and that's what this call is about.
What you have to do is take mastery over your mind, because in Romans 12:2, we're told, do not be conformed any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. You can be in God's will as long as your thinking lines up with God's thinking. Commit to asking God to make you aware of your excessive demands you're putting on yourself and to enable you to let him take control of your thoughts each day. Literally, you can pray, Lord, prick my conscience whenever I demand perfectionism of myself or others. Do you put your standards of perfection onto somebody else?
I'm going to say yes on that.
You had a perfectionistic father, somebody who's hypercritical, so that you feel inadequate, and the only way you could feel adequate would be to perform perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you'll want to do is to eliminate your all-or-nothing thinking.
All-or-nothing thinking. What's another way to say that? Black and white. My way or the highway. All or nothing. And that doesn't leave room for progress, doing it okay here. It's kind of like a first draft. Some people say, well, but if I write it, it won't be perfect. Well, that's why you do a draft. It may not be that good. I know about that. And then you go to the next and you keep refining it and refining it until you go, yes, that's what I mean to say. It's like all or nothing. It's all now. It's got to be all now. That's why there's not much patience that a perfectionist has, because their inner demand is so powerful. But don't forget, life is a series of choices, and anyone can change the choices they make.
Perfectionists are known for having all or nothing thinking, or black and white thinking. If it's not perfect, it's not worth doing. I can remember seeing a beautiful package, and I would watch my mother unwrap it and do it again. And I would say, Mother, why are you doing that? And she said, well, it just wasn't done perfectly. I saw her being a perfectionist, and I asked her about her upbringing. I said, were you this way as a child? She said, no. But see, my dad was very, very, very hard on my mother, and everything had to be just right. So she conformed in her adulthood so as not to be criticized. She began to take on the perfectionistic characteristics for herself. Is this making sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Totally. I've never thought about it like this before.
Mm-hmm. Are you a neatnik?
I like to have a place for everything mm-hmm. in its place.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
The thing is that I've been so lazy that my living area kind of gets messy,
mm-hmm.
and it aggravates me. So I go around aggravated all the time because I don't clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's really kind of dumb when I think about it.
Do you hear the you should, you ought, you have to, you, the dialogue of demand, self-demand, and some on others. So what's the matter with these demands? What's the matter with the dialogue of demand? Unrealistic. You know, we always have more to do. All of us have more that needs to be done. And if we give these demands priority, trying to do it all, then it's overload and we just can stop and say, I can't do anything. I can't go forward. So let's go on with this call.
Remember, I talked about these demands that you put on yourself. These are inner demands. You've got to correct any unrealistic expectation of yourself, like an inner little voice saying, you should do this, you ought to, you must, you have to. Here's some things you haven't put away, and then you beat yourself up, as opposed to, okay, I'll decide that 2 o'clock on Saturday, I'm just going to kind of do the clean sweep type thing, you know, put everything where it belongs. But it's not the end of the world if there are certain things that you choose not to do. To be controlled by these inner demands to go around feeling like a failure, that's not God's will for you. That's not God's best.
And I know that. That's mm-hmm. why I'm struggling so mm-hmm. much with this.
I'm going to send some material to read on perfectionism, I think could be very helpful. And just start by praying, Lord, open my eyes. I think it's one of those, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. You need to be transformed by the renewing of your mind, because I think you're getting it. I'm hearing the light bulbs turn on. Is that right?
Yeah.
It's making sense why you could be stymied, why you're not accomplishing. A lot of times we're depressed, not wanting to face the day because feeling in a way overwhelmed. But if everything has to be perfect, well then, hey, it's too high a standard. Even Paul said, not that I have been made perfect. This is in Philippians. The Apostle Paul, greatest missionary in the world, he says, I haven't been made perfect. So I am excited for you because I really believe there's all the hope in the world for you. You continue to hang on to hope.
I love it when the light bulb turns on and you hear it. It's like, okay, he never thought about it before. There was an underlying reason. It wasn't laziness. If it had been laziness, he wouldn't have called. He wouldn't have reached out for help. He wanted to change, just didn't know how. Well, I want to say that as you learn, you're going to be able to help others, just like me, because I'm just a normal person, and you can do the same thing with people around you.
You're listening to June Hunt, and today we heard how to correct some faulty thinking and take steps towards freedom in the area of procrastination. June will be back in just a minute. Now, if you missed any of today's program, get out your phone, go to your app store, and download the Hope for the Heart broadcast app. For a more comprehensive look into this topic, you can order June's updated Keys for Living on this subject of procrastination. The title is Preventing the Decay of Delay. Again, that's all found at hopefortheheart.org. Now, June is back with a word of hope.
I want you to think of a time when you fell and couldn't lift yourself up. You felt stuck. You needed an outstretched hand to help you. Well, procrastinators are tied to a habit that has them paralyzed. They're blind to a solution. They need a way out of their weary world. Ecclesiastes 4 tells us, two are better than one, because they have a good return for their work. If one falls down, his friend can help him up. But pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. Are there people in your life who need to be pulled out of a pit of procrastination? Do they need someone to believe in them, to take them by the hand and say, this is the way. Walk with me in it. Ask God if he wants to use your strong hand to accomplish such a mission of mercy.
You're listening to Hope for the Heart with June Hunt. Find more practical help, tools, and ideas to prevent procrastination when you visit us at hopefortheheart.org. Hope for the Heart is here to help you discover what the Bible says about the hurts, the habits, and the struggles in life. We do this by taking a biblical and practical look at life's challenges. And with all the ways to communicate, there's no reason for anyone to suffer alone. Listen to this message.
Caregivers come from different backgrounds, education, and experience, but they all have one thing in common, a desire to help those who are hurting. Lifeline to Hope is a brand new caregiver training offered by Hope for the Heart. This 10-week video-based program can help you deploy a small, effective group of caregivers in your church. Biblical caregivers who can help meet the needs of hurting people, connecting lives in crisis with a new or renewed life in Christ. This comprehensive training shows the biblical model for caregiving and includes sessions on effective listening, crisis intervention, family dynamics, having a ministry of presence, and more. Proverbs 11:14 reminds us that where there is no guidance, the people fall, but in abundance of counselors, there is victory. Discover more at lifelinetohope.org. lifelinetohope.org.
Well, Lifeline to Hope is a great course. And can you imagine what your church and community might look like with Lifeline to Hope caregivers? That website again is lifelinetohope.org. For June Hunt, I'm Joe Wolf. Remember that there is hope no matter the circumstance. And we'll talk more about this hope on Monday, right here on Hope for the Heart.